guys, and welcome back to Jules on the Hustle. Today I have a very special guest. She was a professional tennis player, Melanie Udan. Does that name ring any bells? If not, does the word believe recall your memory? From a very young age, she was a tennis superstar. She was the number two ranked ITF junior. She played for the American Fed Cup team from 2009 to 2011. In 2011, she was also a mixed doubles US Open champion with fellow American player Jack Sock. 2009 was the year to remember for Melanie. She reached the round of 16 in Wimbledon, and then just 6 weeks later, she made it to the quarterfinals of the US Open at just 17 years old. She reached a career high of number 31 in April of 2010. She's only 5'6". I'm very curious, as a fellow short girl, although I am shorter than 5'6". 5'5" on a good day, we'll say. I'd like to hear how she uses her height to her advantage. Without further ado, Melanie Udan. From a very young age, you were really a killer tennis player, let's be honest. From the juniors, you were number two in the world, junior ITFs, and throughout your career, you've done incredible things. But 2009 was a great year for you, wasn't it?
It was, yes.
What was it about 2009 that your tennis just went to the next level?
You know, it's pretty funny. Like, I honestly don't know why everything happened that year, because I'd only turned pro in 2008. So really, like, 1 year before, I was still playing juniors up until 2008. And then in my junior career, I kind of slowly, like, taken steps, like, up the rankings. And I never, like, made these huge, like, leaps and bounds, you know. It was just kind of, like, slowly, like, step by step. And then all of a sudden, in 2009, like, I, like, had two huge runs and slams, obviously, in the Wimbledon round 16 in the U.S. Open quarterfinals. And then, of course, like, that, like, skyrocketed my ranking, you know. And I was in qualifying Wimbledon at, like, 150, maybe, in the world, which was kind of, like, where I felt supposed to be, you know. And then all of a sudden, at the end of 2009, I'm, like, 31 in the world. And it was just, like, oh my gosh, like, now I'm in all these much bigger tournaments. I'm playing players that are the best of the best, you know, and every single tournament. And then there was also, like, an added pressure, which I didn't have before, because no one really knew who I was, and then all of a sudden, everybody knew who I was. So it was a big change, like, in just, you know, that 1 year. You're right, 2009, it went from just turning pro and coming out of the juniors to all of a sudden being, like, the top-ranked American behind Venus and Serena.
Right. Big difference. And you were only 17 years old. So you were living the teenage dream, the American teenage dream, really. So you were saying how you pretty much went up, like, 120 spots in 1 year. How did it kind of feel entering 2010? Did you feel more pressure, or what was that like?
There was a lot of pressure. You know, what's funny is because most people, like, a lot of people don't see the behind the scenes. They don't see the training. They just kind of see, like, what's on TV, right? And so I did really well, and then I was like, all of a sudden, I'm supposed to do that well every single tournament. And that's just so unrealistic. That never happens. There's, you know, you lose most of the time a lot more than you're winning most weeks. Right. And so I think from the fans and from the crowd, sometimes, like, it would get to me a little bit, because there was this pressure and people were just surprised and shocked when I didn't win. And for me, like, I had never played those type of tournaments. You know, I had never played people, you know, consistently that ranked top 50 in the world. You know, all of a sudden it was a huge change. And then, of course, with the added pressure of not having a lot of other Americans coming up besides Venus and Serena, people were kind of looking for the next female American coming up, and I was pretty a young kid, and, you know, I felt like a lot of people could relate to me, and so that was that was a lot. People wanted to know everything about my story and my personal life, my family, and it's just, it was a lot. Like, I was there to play tennis, and it just, people wanted to know, like, everything about everything. So it was a lot to handle at 17, for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. When you're watching tennis now, you see the up-and-coming big-time players, maybe like Coco Gauff, you're probably thinking, like, that's kind of like what I did. And then you kind of appreciate what you did a little bit more. And so, like, how do you feel about Coco Gauff's journey right now?
I mean, she is amazing. She's only 15 years old. I mean, I think now she's 16, but having that amazing run at 15 and just how she has handled everything so far, I think she's very mature for her age. I think she has a good support system around her. And I think, honestly, like, I think with me, I think I kind of was an example to some people. Yes, it was, like, great, like, a great success and stuff, but also it was kind of like, okay, people put so much pressure on me that now it's like, okay, let's not do that to the next person that comes. And so I really think that it was a good learning lesson for some people. Because I feel like they could tell that obviously I struggled some with that, and it took me a while to kind of like get back and not have so much pressure on myself. And now obviously there's a lot more Americans though doing well now. There's not really all the spotlight on one, which I think is great. I think that's why we have so many Americans coming up now, especially in the women's game. But yeah, Coco is amazing. I think she's the real deal. I think she's going to be around for a long time. And I'm really excited to see what she does.
You mentioned an interesting point. So does a part of you wish that you climbed the ladder a little bit more slowly? Or do you think it's just how things happen? Maybe people put too much pressure on you?
I definitely wouldn't change the way that things happen. I mean, you know, it was such an amazing experience. You know, you train all those years to play on Arthur Ashe Stadium and to have those wins, the whole crowd cheering for you. You know, it's nothing like that. There's nothing like that. So I definitely don't regret any of that. The thing that I do kind of regret is just the way, like, I didn't really know how to handle everything. You know, I mean, I did the best I could, but, like, I probably said yes to too many things. Like, I was doing so many photo shoots and, you know, just charity events and just meeting with people and just, you know, commercials and, like, all this kind of stuff that kind of took away from the practice time, which, like, I was kind of being told, like, you need to do this. You know, this comes with doing well in tennis. And for me, I was like, I just want to go practice. You know, I didn't do tennis or play tennis for the spotlight. It was, you know, I loved the game. Like, I wanted to see how far I could go. And
that's really interesting you say that, because I do believe that some players enjoy the spotlight more than the sport.
Yeah.
But you genuinely, you just loved the sport and everything kind of came with it. And you felt like you wanted to do the photo shoots, do the charity events just to show that and show the good person that you are. Yeah.
Thank you.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, I knew you had to do some of that kind of stuff. And obviously I had some sponsors, and of course, like, I wanted to, you know, give back to them and do what they were asking me to do. You know, and things like that. And obviously do things for the fans, people that have been supporting me. But it was definitely just like a lot. I think the biggest part was also just like people wanting to know, like, a lot about my whole story and personal life and stuff, which, you know, like, people, most of the time you want to keep that stuff private, and then people are just digging in, and, you know, they want to know everything, and they just want to get to know you, and I'm like, you know, they're really, like, strangers, and, like, you know, I mean, that part was really tough for me.
Oh, absolutely. It would be hard for anyone, especially for, like, a 17-year-old. You mentioned earlier that people don't know what happens behind the scenes. A lot of people don't know the hate mail.
Yeah.
And I'm sure as someone that was under the spotlight every win and every loss. People were betting on your matches. Did you get your fair share of messages?
Definitely. You know, and I like learned to ignore them. I mean, you know, it's hard to like read something though and then just like let it go. But I definitely like tried to ignore it the best I could, and definitely like don't put up with any kind of bullying or, you know, calling names and things like that. It really is like really bad. I mean, I learned quickly, like I know it happens to like every single athlete out there, which is such a bummer, you know. Yeah. Especially if they're betting on you probably behind the scenes, and you know they lost some money, and then I think a lot of it comes from behind that, unfortunately. And then just, you know, they want you to win so bad and you don't. Yeah. And then they just want to like send you a message. So
yeah,
it's really unfortunate. I wish it wasn't like that. But
yeah, and for people that are listening to this, it's not even just directed towards us. It's like to our families, our friends, how
right.
They want the worst of the worst to happen. And sometimes you feel like, am I safe? Like, are they going to come find me and stuff like that? It gets pretty intense. So I just wanted to talk about that for a sec, because I'm sure you've had to deal with that. But going back to the 2009 US Open, I obviously love the US Open, and I've watched you play at the US Open because I'm a New Yorker, and so it's really special. I want to talk about your shoes.
Okay.
Can we talk a little bit about the, what is it, what were your shoes all about? What did they say? The colors, everything.
Yeah, so I was sponsored by Adidas at the time, and they had asked, it was me and Sam Querrey actually were the two players that were asked to design our own pair of shoes for that US Open. And, like, I didn't really think that much of it. Like, I had no idea what it was gonna become. But I wanted to kind of, like, reflect my personality and then the color. So I did pink, blue, and yellow. I wanted them to be bright. I didn't want them to be, like, boring. And then,
yeah.
I, like, most people, I had heard he put his name on it. And I had heard, like, I guess some people, like, oh, yeah, just put your name on it, you know, and I'm like, I don't really want to put my name. Like, I want to, you know, put something that, or a word that could possibly, like, help me during the tournament, you know, that I want to, like, reflect on, look at, and then thought of Believe, and I'm like, well, this is perfect. It'll be my first U.S. Open, and I'm in on my own ranking, first, like, main draw U.S. Open, and, yeah, they turned into this, like, huge thing where
yeah.
I'm like, oh, and then now people, it's funny, people remember me, like, from Believe. Like, Believe is kind of, like, a word that stuck with my name.
So that's your nickname? Do people call you Believe instead of Melanie?
No, it's more like, they'll be like, if someone recognizes me, they'll be like,
Believe.
Be like, oh, you're
going to
get, oh, Believe.
Like, oh, that's great.
It's really funny. I mean, I like love it because I just love that word and what it stands for and means. And so, yeah, it's very cool.
I like your take on not just putting your name. I think that's really special. I feel like journaling is really important to people, or having like a piece of paper on court, and to have like a word on your shoes that kind of just like triggers something in your brain that brings confidence is important. I sometimes write like a word on my grip or a little phrase.
Yeah.
The thing I oftentimes struggle with is feeling like I belong. So like if I'm playing against like a opponent ranked way above me, I would write something like, I belong here, but that kind of goes with, like, Believe. You were playing against women that were way older than you, ranked way above you or ahead of you, and you had to believe to make it, like, to the quarterfinals of that 2009 US Open. So, I want to talk about, you're not the tallest.
No.
You're an inch taller than me on a good day, because I'm actually, like, 5'4" and something. So I want to talk about how our height, I feel like so many people are so quick to say, oh, you're not tall, you're a tennis player, what? And I'm like, oh my goodness. Tell me, you're 5'6", or is it really 5'6"?
Yeah,
okay, so you are 5'6".
Yeah.
how have you used your height to your advantage, I'm going to say?
I'm sure, I mean, you probably know the same as me. Like, when you're small, you have to be so fast, you know? I mean, not the strongest, not the most powerful compared to some of these 6 feet tall players. And so, for me, that was, like, in all my training, you know, it was very specific to, like, what my game style was, like, what I had to be very good at because I didn't have the really powerful serve and, you know, the super, super powerful ground strokes and could really, like, blow people off the court. So that's something I did really well, I think, in the juniors growing up, and my coach helped me with really honing in on what my game style was and what I had to, like, what I had to improve so much. And, you know, I think the footwork was probably the biggest thing. Yeah. I mean, I have to say, like, for me, that was one of my biggest strengths was my speed on the court and just the footwork and adjustment steps and being in position for every ball.
I feel like you take a lot of little steps.
Yeah, I did.
Yeah.
Probably too many sometimes.
But yeah, I'm guilty of that.
I felt like it was too many. I was wasting energy.
Yeah. Exactly. I know exactly what you mean. Those little steps help, but they also take away your energy. So it was kind of like a catch-22. You retired in 2017. What kind of led you to that decision, or what kind of happened?
Unfortunately, I had a bunch of injuries. They really started in 2012, and it was a bummer because I had finally, like, kind of gotten back on track. I had a new coach, and I was, like, back in the top 100 again. I won, like, my first WTA tournament, and then all of a sudden, that off season, I had gotten this, like, severe muscle condition, and then I had 2 heart surgeries over the years, and then I had, like, just an eye surgery. I just had, like, so many different things. It was, like, one thing happened, and then it just led to another and led to another, and you know, honestly, like, the biggest thing was the mental struggle was just as big as the physical struggle for me, because I would try so hard to come back, and I'd be out for, like, months at a time. None of these were really, like, 1 month. It was, like, months at a time, and then, of course, playing at that level, I mean, you have to be at the top of your game to compete. And I just never felt like I was able to get back to that, like, 100%. And so finally, after, like, I think it was probably 4 times I had an injury and come back and had an injury and come back. I had gotten mono and a horrible hamstring injury that, like, was not getting better. And so that was pretty much when I decided, like, I think my body has, you know, taken its toll, and it's kind of at its best it's gonna do, and then it's time. And I really felt, like, relieved after I announced my retirement, and that's how I really knew it was the right thing, like, that it was time and I had to figure out my next chapter.
Yeah, first of all, I'm so sorry to hear everything you went through.
Thank you.
Between the illnesses and the injuries, that can't be tough. That can't be easy for any person.
Yeah.
So what are you up to these days then? When you retired and then now. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, the first year after I retired, I did a bunch of different things because I wasn't sure what I wanted to do. And I wanted to, like, stay busy and then not just kind of, like, sit there and, you know, figure it out. I wanted to actually, like, be active and then do things. So I did a little some broadcasting, like, commentating, interviewing. I did coaching and a bunch of, like, exhibitions, charity events, a little bit of everything, but, like, clinics and things like that, and a bunch of traveling. And I really decided that I think the coaching is me. Like, I feel like that's what I'm meant to do. So after, like, a year, 2019, beginning of 2019, I started to fit, like, coaching full time. Before, I was coaching kind of, like, part time, and now I'm officially coaching full time, and I'm really, really enjoying it.
Wow. So full time, are you traveling with any students?
Traveling to some tournaments. Yep. I'm doing a lot of USTA camps and been to the campus in Orlando a bunch. supposed to, you know, well, obviously with everything going on, supposed to do some things with them, like, this summer or not. I don't know if it's going to happen. But it's just been really great. I feel like I've been, you know, I've been around a lot of great coaches, especially going to a lot of these USTA camps and events, and just, like, learning and gaining as much knowledge as I can from the coaching side, and, you know, hoping that having the playing side plus the coaching side will make me a really, really great coach.
Yeah, I'm sure lessons from you are totally high demand. Do people, like, are you one of the most popular coaches to get, like, a lesson from? People probably go crazy.
You know, it's kind of funny. I learned this, like, when I started coaching. So a lot of people that, like, know me from the tour and, like, even coaches on tour or whatever, they kind of have that same thought. But then there's a lot of people in Atlanta that the tennis is so big here. There's so many coaches, right? And so they're like, oh, well, I just want, you know, my kid to have a lesson. Like, it doesn't matter who. Or, oh, like, she was a player, but, like, how long has she been a coach for? So it's kind of, they don't think about the, like, I guess the experience and expertise I have from, you know, the level that I played and things like that. Yeah. So that has been actually a little bit different for me, a little tricky. Like, not that I thought it was going to be easy or anything.
Yeah.
But I definitely, like, thought that, you know, I mean, it's still been good. It's not like I'm struggling to get lessons or anything like that. But it's a little bit different. I've had to prove myself as a coach. That's for sure.
Wow, that is so interesting. I would have never thought. But it just shows you that we constantly have to prove ourselves and, like, start over in any new field. And I wouldn't expect that. But I'm so glad to hear that you're happy coaching and you have a really great way of delivering your message, I can tell. So I'm sure you're a kick butt coach.
Thank you. I hope I am, but I'm hoping to continue to learn and get better.
Yeah, I feel like just like tennis, as you get more experience of coaching, seeing what works with some of the players, how players kind of understand the message, it helps you as a coach learn how to deliver your message.
Oh yeah, for sure. You know, I know like what I used to like.
Yeah, exactly. But that's that's as a pro tennis player, you know how you receive the message well, so you know how to deliver it better. That's how other coaches that never had that really high professional tennis experience, they wouldn't be able to do that like you. So I think you need to sell yourself and kind of, don't be humble, girl.
Okay, I'm going to try not to be. But no, you're totally right. Yeah. Like, that is definitely an advantage for sure. I mean, knowing, and then obviously being around other high-level players and seeing them with their coaches. You know, I was around some of the best coaches in the world.
Exactly.
And, obviously some of the best players in the world and seeing what worked and what didn't. And so, yes, I agree with you. It is an advantage. So I just got to get people to know that.
Oh, of course. To see that. So looking back on your whole entire tennis playing, like on tour experiences, what would you say, if you had to pick one moment that just really stands out of everything that you've done? I know it's hard to pick one because you killed it, but if you had to pick one.
You know, two are close, but for me, honestly, I think all the work I put in, you know, over the years, which we talked about, like, people don't see, you know, you start at 9 years old, like, 10 years old, like, you're homeschooling. I was homeschooling at 12 years old. Like, I was fully committed then, you know? Mm-hmm. And, so it would probably be, like, playing at the U.S. Open 2009. And it was probably, honestly, like, beating, either, like, Dementieva or Sharapova, just because of, like, it was almost just like, wow, like, all this hard work, like, everything I put in over the years, and to be, like, standing there, like, with a win over them and having, like, the entire crowd, like, on their feet, like, cheering for me. I mean, that is just, like, a feeling that I won't ever forget. So
I feel like I remember this photo in my head so vividly where you won the match. I don't know which one it was, but your, like, hands were up like this, and, like, the whole crowd was up. I mean, that, you probably had that replaying in your mind. Or did you, were you able to sleep, like, any days during the U.S. Open?
Yeah, I was, like, really tired. Yeah. Oh, my God. It was a lot, like, going on during the day. So when I did finally get back to my room, I was, like, passing out pretty early. But yes, lots of excitement, lots of great memories, for sure.
Now, what's your take? Do you think the U.S. Open will happen this year?
You know, I really hope so. I mean, it's such an amazing event. Whether you're American, whether you're not American, for the fans, I mean, all the people that work there, all the staff, the volunteers, you know, it really would be sad, I think, if it didn't happen. And I'm really hoping that they do, especially because, I mean, just, like, what they're doing for the coronavirus that's happening right now.
At the tennis center, the Billie Jean King National Tennis Center.
Making it into a hospital facility.
That is insane. I mean,
it's, like, amazing. So I really hope it happens, but I'm worried that it might not.
I was saying this thing the other day. Let's see if I can remember. It was, like, in tennis, love means nothing, except during coronavirus, love means everything, like the hospital beds, everything, which is crazy. That is where I train. So, okay. Yeah, it's a beautiful thing that they're helping a lot of people. Last question I have for you is if you can go back and tell your 12-year-old self some advice, what would you tell her?
Oh, that's a good question.
It's never easy.
You know, it would probably be, like, I don't have any regrets in my career. I mean, the health stuff is out of my control. So, it would probably be to, like, if I had the success that I had, to not, like, put, you know, not worry about, like, what anyone else thought. And to really, like, focus on myself and, like, my career and the support I had around me, and not let any of, like, the pressure and, you know, what people were saying get to me, like, the best I could. If I knew ahead of time, I feel like I could have maybe handled it a little bit better. So that would probably be, like, the only thing, is trying to handle the pressure a little bit better, not let it affect me, you know, in my matches. But besides that, you know, I really am happy with the career I had, and I did the best I could with the hand I was dealt, and you know, I'm excited for my coaching career.
It's so interesting you say that, because when I got injured, I got to step away from the tennis court for, now it's been about a year, and I had a torn UCL ligament in my elbow, and so stepping away has made me realize that when I'm out on the court and I think everyone is judging me, all the tennis coaches, all the players, they're not really judging you as much as you think in your head. You build this huge picture in your head that everyone is kind of tearing you apart, and if you hit a double fault, that they're totally judging you. So now I feel like when I've gotten back to practicing, if I make a silly error or do something dumb on the court by accident, like, not to think too much of it. Like, I'm a human, my opponent is a human, and when you think of it like that, I feel like you get less nervous and you feel less anxious, and that's helped me.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I've always been one, you know, to not try to worry about what other people think, but this was kind of a different, like, scenario, and it was hard not to when, like, the whole world was, like, watching me.
Yeah, I guess you had a little bit different.
But still, it's a very good lesson. It's a good lesson to learn, for sure.
And I think it comes with the territory of being an individual sport. You get in your own head. So I give us... We can give ourselves a little bit credit there. We're an individual sport. So.
Okay, good. Yeah. I like that.
Other than that, Mel, this was so awesome, and I really appreciate your time.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. It was great catching up with you.
Yeah.
Stay safe and stay healthy. Stay in your house. Don't go anywhere.
I know. I really have to. Thank you. I will. Guys, I am in shock. Who would not want to take a lesson with Melanie? First of all, she's such a sweet girl. She has all the experience in the world. I mean, she would just kick every other coach's butt. No offense to everyone out there. Like, I get it. People want their kids to have tennis lessons with coaches that have been around for a while. But there's no better coach, especially if you want to make it to a very high level. There's no better coach than being with someone that has been on the world's biggest stages multiple times and has really won and has beaten a lot of our tennis legends. So if you're listening to this and you want a lesson from Melanie, I definitely recommend it. I want a lesson from Melanie. But it's also very interesting to hear about how she rose in 2009, how the pressure came. And she's right. She really set the standard very high. And now I feel like other up-and-coming Americans such as Coco Gauff can learn, and the coaches can learn what to do and what really not to do. So thanks, Melanie. You really helped not only American tennis, but the progression and growth of our Americans. A very sweet girl. Thank you, Melanie, for joining me. As always, be sure to stay tuned here. Follow me on Instagram and Twitter at Jules L Baba, at JulesElBaba. See you guys next time on Jules on the Hustle.